Greetings and welcome to another edition of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. My name is Brian Ibbett.
And I am the news.
That's going to give you some indication on who we're talking about today. Yeah, it's funny because usually on this show we'll pick a band that has a couple hits, a couple songs people are familiar with, and kind of explore them and introduce, you know, people to the rest of their music. These guys ruled the 80s, ruled the early to mid 80s, I think. And I think if you were to go up to somebody and say, how many singles or how many songs by Huey Lewis and the News can you name? I bet people could pull out seven or eight.
I was going to say half easily. A dozen without even thinking.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you were to play another dozen or so, they'd be like, oh, yeah, of course I know that song. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I know, you know, Walking on a Thin Line. And I know Do You Believe in Love and all mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit in the Blues Traveler episode. That Blues Traveler in the early to mid-90s was as ubiquitous as Huey Lewis was in the early to mid-80s.
I'd say close. I mean, I think Huey Lewis, they really owned the 80s.
Yeah, maybe it's a fair comparison, but I think Huey overshadows it.
For sure, yeah. But you're right. I mean, I think people know a lot more Blues Traveler music than they think they do. Mm-hmm. Like when you start playing, it's like, oh, yeah, I know All in the Groove, and I know Hook, and I know mm-hmm. Run Around and all that. But with Huey Lewis and the News, I mean, their greatest hits collections are greatest hits collections. It's not like, hey, here's our couple of number one songs and a bunch of other songs we kind of like that didn't feel like they didn't get a fair shake.
Do you realize the only thing that really separates the two is Weird Al has not done a Blues Traveler song?
Really?
Yeah. I think that's the defining moment. That's the line.
That's when you know you've made it. Uh-huh. When Weird Al parodies you. I think you're right. I think so. What would he do, though? I mean, I guess it would have to be Hook. Hook would have been the one to run
or,
around.
Or Run Around. It'd have to be Hook or Run Around. Those are the ones that would probably lend themselves easiest to a parody.
And it's not...
It would be The Cook. The Cook brings you around. Because it'd be a food one.
And unlike the Don McLean song that he did recently, well, so sort of like 17 years ago for Phantom Menace... he would have had to have done those in the day. I mean, there are some that he can get away with saying, all right, that song still resonates with people and I can still do a parody using that song. But it would have had to have been done in 94 or something.
Yeah, exactly.
When that album was hot. Let's talk, though, about Huey Lewis and the News, because that's what's at the top of my spreadsheet here. They are an American pop, rock, and doo-wop band from San Francisco. Had a substantial run of hits in the 80s and some in the 90s. Here's how they started. In 1972, singer and harmonica player Huey Lewis and keyboardist Sean Hopper joined the Bay Area band Clover. Clover recorded several albums in the 70s, and in the middle of the decade, they moved to England to be part of that pub rock scene out there with like
Level 42.
No, Level 42 is not pub rock.
No, they became pub rock after World Machine.
I would not call them pub rock. Pub rock is like your Nick Lowe, Dave Edmonds, Elvis Costello.
What does Elvis Costello have to do with Clover?
Well, I'm going to tell you, as a matter of fact. Without Huey Lewis as part of the band, the rest of Clover was backup for Elvis Costello on Elvis's first album, My Aim Is True. So the backing band on songs like Allison and This Year's Model that was the second album, but Allison came from that first album, and that's the backing band is the News sans Huey Lewis, basically.
Yeah. But while they were doing that, Huey was working with Thin Lizzy.
Yeah. Which I need to check out that song. So he plays harmonica on the song Baby Drives Me Crazy. And I'm not as familiar with that one. As I am some other Thin Lizzy songs like Boys Are Back in Town and Jailbreak and all that. So I'll have to go back and listen to that one. The Clover, the band returned back to the Bay Area near the end of the 1970s. There was a band called Soundhole.
otherwise known as Sound Hole in the Farts.
Right, exactly. They were Clover's main competition in the Bay Area. Soundhole played with Van Morrison. Members of the band were Johnny Calla, Bill Gibson, and Mario Cipollina. In 1978, Huey got a singles contract from Phonogram Records and joined Hopper, Gibson, Calla, and Cipollina to form Huey Lewis and the American Express. Don't leave home without them. In 1979, they released a single as American Express. The single was called Exodisco, which is basically a disco version of the theme from the film Exodus.
And
I'm
believe
not
me,
making this up.
If I can find it, I will drop in a sample.
I love it. Please do. The single, as you could probably guess, was mostly ignored. Later that year, they added Chris Hayes on guitar, and they moved over to Chrysalis Records. And the name was changed, feeling that the credit card company probably would send them a very expensive cease and desist, and they'd have to pay that over time with 19.8% interest monthly.
So I have to, before we jump into the albums, I have to tell you that this was a really hard week for me. Not because the music was bad, not because it didn't age well, not because I didn't enjoy it, but it's because of all those weird, awkward high school and junior high memories it brought back.
Yeah. You know what? For me too. There was a lot of that. There was a lot of vaguely remembering the music videos that went along with some of these songs. And it's like, was this the one where they're on an island, or was this the one where they're on a beach and they're buried up to their heads in sand and bopping their heads back and forth, and was this the one, you know, there was a lot of that back and forth where, is this the one where he shoves his face in a, in a sink full of cold water?
But I have to tell you, I was a really awkward kid, if you couldn't tell by me being an awkward adult.
Come on now.
And some of these were actually kind of anxiety inducing memories of awkwardly trying to get through the social structure of junior high and high school.
Huey Lewis and the PTSD is what you're going through, basically.
I didn't.
You gotta make it up. That's the title of this week's episode.
I did. I did need a new drug.
Yeah, there we go. Wow. No, I had that too. Homecoming dances or proms and stuff like that. Again, you know, the dude was everywhere. He was. You gotta think about how different, in a way, pop music was back then, because you've got artists who do soundtrack stuff these days, right? Taylor Swift doing something for the Hunger Games album, or what's his face, Zane doing something for the 50 Shades of Grey sequel or whatever. Mm-hmm. And but these guys seem to be everywhere. Like back when MTV showed music, you know, it was basically. Mm-hmm. They did the music videos, but then they had MTV Spring Break, and it was like, oh yeah, we got like this band and this band and this band. Oh yeah, and Huey Lewis and the News.
Yeah.
And then they'd stick around, and they would play a set of videos, not of their own, but like stuff that they would
kind of
like
curated, set for videos for that hour or something.
Exactly. Program an hour of videos and do interviews, and they were over here and they were over there, and they're making appearances in movies and not just playing music for movies and stuff like that. And they really owned. I mean, they owned from 1982 to like 1986. I think that they. Yeah.
So there was an ad once that said, "Radio, the soundtrack of your life."
Right.
And I have to tell you that Huey Lewis was the soundtrack of my life for the better part of 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was with me through the acne, the awkward first dates, the awkward rejections. It was that he was there.
Well, let me ask you something, because listeners to the show know that you are a big harmonica fan. You love harmonica. Mm-hmm. Were you a harmonica fan before Huey Lewis and the News? Like, was this one of the first bands that like really got you into harmonica? Or
so I owned them before, and I had played, been exposed to some old fashioned like Chicago blues and some Delta blues, stuff like that before. So this was the next step up. So the evolution was, you know, the classic blues artists, then Huey Lewis, and then I discovered Blues Traveler. So that's kind of the evolution of my harmonica playing.
Okay.
So yeah, I knew him and appreciated harmonica and harmonica players before, but I didn't jump in and actually pursue it as something I was going to do well until I ran into Huey Lewis.
Okay. Well, there we go. So that does tell me something about the early days of Hammond Chamberlain.
Yep.
You'll be a subject of a soundography someday. In 1980, they released their first album called Huey Lewis and the News, really putting out that new name that they'd come up with after the American Express.
They were charged with it.
Oh, jeez. You're such a card. That first album went largely unnoticed. It only reached number 203 on the Billboard charts. If you only get up to 203, I don't think you count on the Billboard charts. The Billboard floor is what you're on.
you were cusping the
Billboard
200.
Clippings, right?
Yeah.
It did help them get more exposure in the Bay Area, but the album basically was just kind of uneven. Some really good songs, some. Maybe not so good songs, but it was a fairly uneven collection of music.
Yeah. This was an album that they had to make to learn mm-hmm. how to make an album.
Yeah.
But it's really unspectacular in many, many ways.
It is. It's kind of wallpapery, right? Yeah. I mean, it's there, you're hearing it, and everyone's really good at their instruments, but there's no, I mean, you know, there's no hook to bring you back, to mention Blues Traveler just one more time.
Well, it's funny. I almost picked one of the songs off this album as well on my list,
mm-hmm.
but I'm probably going to drop it in anyway, because it's the one for me, it's the one highlight of the album. So
are you picking it because it's just surrounded with so much flat landscape that it just stands out, or if you heard that song on another album, would you still pick that out?
Well, there are actually a couple of, there's Some of My Lies Are True, which is actually a pretty good song.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one I was thinking about sticking on. And it's the first one. And I don't know if they led off with it because it was their strongest outing for it. Or if it's something that they, you know, I think the reason it's first is there's a reason for it being first, because mm-hmm. lead tracks mm-hmm. were always a thing once upon a time.
Yeah. When you had an album, you needed to get them when the needle dropped on the record. You couldn't buy just the individual songs back then. So.
And so what I think they did was, I think the reason the rest of the album for me suffers is Some of My Lies Are True is actually a really pretty good song. And then everything else just kind of trails off after that.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally get that. They followed that album up with Picture This in 1982. It was certified gold with the success of their first single, Do You Believe in Love? This was such a great song, too.
Yep.
Song remained on the charts of the album. I'm sorry, remained on the charts for 35 weeks, and it peaked at number 13. Hope You Love Me Like You Say You Do and Working for a Living were also released as singles. Again, Working for a Living, another big, big early hit for them that lasted a long time for them. You know, Giving It All Up for Love, I think, was also released as a single.
What's interesting is later they released an album called All I Want Is a Couple Days Off.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like they did the front half of the week, and then later in their career, they just wanted a weekend.
Let me have some days. Boss, I need off this weekend to pay my American Express. All right, 1983, here we go. They released Sports, which was absolutely their most successful album. The album, along with the clever and humorous videos, sprung the band up into worldwide fame. It initially went up to number 6 when it was released, but it slowly moved up the charts and was number 1 in 1984 and went multi-platinum in 1985. And it was due in large part to the 1-2 punch of constant touring and heavy rotation on MTV.
Yeah, they were everywhere on MTV. I mean,
they really were. Yeah. Yeah, it should have been called.
They were almost CNN with so much news they were showing.
Way better joke than I could have made. Four singles from this album reached the top 10: Heart and Soul, I Want a New Drug, The Heart of Rock and Roll, and If This Is It. Those last three all reached number 6. Heart and Soul went up to number 8 in the top 10 list. In 1985, they participated in We Are the World, and Huey even had a solo line in the song.
Which is kind of a claim to fame, because those were hard to probably dole out.
Yeah, totally. I mean, all right, you've got your Lionel Richie, you've got your Michael Jackson, you've got Kenny Rogers.
Didn't Bono do one?
No, he was in the Live Aid.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Do They Know It's Christmas?
That's right.
I'm trying to remember Huey Lewis's line. The rain begins to fall, and the world must come together. There are people dying. It's time to live life. The greatest gift of all. I can't think of what his line was. It wasn't in the first verse, so that's as far as I'm going to go with singing that. But if you just
believe, there's nowhere we can fall. Especially on chipmunk mode.
That's exactly. That's how I have to do it. Like, if I'm in trivia and it's like, oh, what's that song? And I just start going through. Oh, there's the chorus. And there's the name of the song. In 1985, they participated. Oh, that was it. I just said that thing. Also this year, they participated in Back to the Future. Huey Lewis had a cameo in the film as one of the school judges for the Battle of the Bands contest, and mm-hmm. the band actually contributed The Power of Love and Back in Time to the soundtrack.
The song that he played that Huey shot him down on was a heavy metal version of The Power of Love.
It was like the, but it was like super, super discordant heavy metal.
Yeah.
It's a great shot. I mean, Huey Lewis kind of looking at the other two judges mm-hmm. and then standing up with his bullhorn and saying, that's enough. That's all.
It's too loud.
Too loud. Right. Exactly. Let's see. Power of Love, by the way, reached number 1 on the Billboard charts. Probably the biggest song, like if you were, you know, in that practice of asking people to name Huey Lewis and the News songs, probably Power of Love is going to be the one they say. But I'll bet you 3 out of 10 people will say, oh, that Back to the Future song.
Yes. Yeah.
In 1986, they followed up Sports with Four, F-O-R-E, like the golf swing and an exclamation point. This album reached number 1 on the charts. Stuck With You, Jacob's Ladder, also reached number 1. In his head. Now he's trying to save me when I'm doing all right, the best that I can. Just another fallen angel, trying to get through the night. Hip to Be Square was a mainstream rock hit.
Hip to Be Square has one of the best Sesame Street parodies ever.
Oh, yeah. Well, what is it?
It was Hip to Be a Square, and it was a square singing it.
That's right. Right. Yes, I totally remember that. I looked at the lyrics, by the way, after listening to this album, and half the songs on this album, 10 songs on the album, 5 of them begin with I, like, I used to be a renegade, mm-hmm. And the only, you know, one of the ones that breaks that is Stuck With You, which begins with we. So at least he's including somebody else in one of those.
And go back to Sesame Street. So this album was brought to you by the letter I and the number 4.
4! yeah, no kidding. The album had 5 top 10 singles released as part of it. And huge, huge album. Stuck With You, as I mentioned, Hip to Be Square, Jacob's Ladder, I Know What I Like. That begins with an I. Simple as That and Doing It All for My Baby.
Which probably starts with an I, too.
Only the UK. What's that?
Doing It All for My Baby starts with an I, too, I think.
It does. It totally does. Yes. And I Never Walk Alone. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's funny. It's like his notebook, his college rule 3-ring notebook that he's using to write his lyrics. I'll begin with, he just puts the word I and then starts writing from there. That's how he does it.
He might have been having some ophthalmology problems at the time and just kind of channeled it.
Right, there you go. It's they're all optically related eyes. In 1988, they followed up Four with Small World, and it was considered noticeably weaker than the previous two albums. It peaked at number 11 and only went platinum. It produced one single It produced only one top 10 single, Perfect World.
I like your note here, by the way.
Yeah, and it's totally accurate. You listen to this album, and it's like the producers said, hey, we'd like you to make 10 songs that sound just like The Power of Love, but no songs that sound like Stuck With You or Heart of Rock and Roll or Do You Believe in Love or anything like that. Like, forget all those other songs. We want every song to sound like The Power of Love, and it totally does. It's some even more than others, especially like the title track.
This really has one of my favorite instrumentals on it, though. They have Bobo Tempo, which I really, really like.
Because that's about, I think it's about pot, isn't it? Bobo Tempo?
I think so.
Slammin' is the instrument.
That's right. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes, Slammin' is the one I like. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, that's all right.
Yeah.
Walking with the Kid. So it's like right in the middle of the album, there's a song, Walking with the Kid. I'm listening to this and they're talking about, you know, going to the playground and tearing things up. And then he's got my back and I've got his. And I'm like, now, is he talking about like kid as in literally walking with a kid? Or is he talking about like, dude, I'm going to go hang with the kid tonight, man. He's always got my back. We're going to go to the bar and drink some. And then he gets to the very end and he says, walking with my son. Yep. I was like, okay, so that's it. He's basically. Well,
that made my list.
What's that?
That made my list.
Oh, it did? I'm sorry. That's all right, okay. We'll talk about that more.
The reason I picked it, I'll throw it out. The reason I picked it is because the 49ers are the backup singers.
What?
Yeah, Ronnie Lott, Joe Montana, Dwight Clark, and Ricky Ellison are the backup singers.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I can't wait to talk about it. Okay, we'll talk more about that when we get to our playlist, but holy crap, I had no idea. I love that. Let's see, also in 1988, Huey Lewis did the theme song for Oliver and Company. Billy Joel, also on that soundtrack.
Yeah, Oliver, the first song, Once Upon a Time in New York City, Huey Lewis, second song, what's it called? The dog sings it. Why Should I Worry? Why Should I Care? Mm-hmm. I got Street Savoir Faire, that one. That's Billy Joel.
Wow. So there you go. That kind of shows you the pecking order in 1988 between two of the biggest artists of the 70s and 80s, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe Billy Joel had kind of peaked prior to that and Huey Lewis was kind of the new kid in town, the new hotness.
Yeah.
When that tour ended, the Small World tour ended in 1989, they decided to take a break and they parted ways with Chrysalis Records. In 1991, 3 years later, or 2 years later, no, 3 years later, they released the album Hard at Play, which was released on their new label, EMI. They went back to their roots, the R&B rock sounds of their earlier albums, and released a couple singles from that album, Couple Days Off, which got up to number 11. Hit Me Like a Hammer, which got up to number 21 on the charts.
This is the tour that I saw them on at the Tokyo Dome on New Year's Eve, 1990, going into 91. I saw them, let's see, it was Loudness, Hanoi Rocks, Brian Adams, Don Henley, and Huey Lewis.
Wow. Crazy. What a crazy lineup.
Yeah, especially those first two.
Hanoi Rocks and Loudness? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Brian Adams, Don Henley, and Huey Lewis. It feels like you could close your eyes, And aside from knowing who does what, who does which song, mm-hmm. you know, they could have traded songs and nobody probably would have noticed.
Don Henley actually put on a hell of a show. He got behind the drums for half of it and sang while he was playing.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Bryan Adams was still relatively relevant at the time.
Right.
And Huey put on a great show.
That's really cool. That still seems like, I mean, you know, 1991, that would have been a great show. Mm-hmm. Then they went on a world tour, and this would be the last album of new material that they would release for a decade. Huey and the News moved to Elektra Records for the next release, so bouncing around from label to label. In 1994, they released the album Four Chords and Several Years Ago, which was basically covers of doo-wop and rock songs from the 50s and 60s. And I really like, you know, this album and Soulsville are a great example of not just, you know, you decide, all right, we're going to do a cover, an album where we cover Motown music, Motown songs. And it's not just, all right, grab that Motown's greatest hits. Let's cover Heard It Through the Grapevine and My Girl and, you know, and basically cover everything that everybody's familiar with. No, they do a great job of actually saying, oh, you know, this one means a lot to me. We're going to cover this one and Don't Trust the Green Grass or whatever it is and things like that. And it's more obscure R&B covers. And I really, really like that.
Yeah. I own this one on mini disc.
Do you really?
I did.
Do you still have it?
No, I don't. I got rid of it. When I sold my mini disc stuff all in one kind of collection. That was just part of the bonus stuff I threw in were the, let's see, I owned Pearl Jam 10, Huey Lewis, Ozzy Osbourne, Osmosis. Let's see, there was like, Forrest Gump soundtrack and something else. I can't remember what the fifth one was, but I just kind of threw
Forrest Gump soundtrack on mini disc as well. I still do. That one I do still have.
Yeah. So,
because I do still have all my mini disc crap.
I have a player and a few like bootlegs I made when I recorded shows of live bands, but I don't have like the main like component unit and all the stuff anymore.
I don't know why. I honestly don't know why I keep it because there's no, I mean, I guess because I've got some great mixes and stuff on there, but I don't know why else I'd have that, right? Because it's like, you know, there's no convenience that it offers that any other way of listening to music these days has.
But you did get rid of your digital cassette stuff, didn't you?
I never had DAT.
Oh. No, DAT's different than the CSS. Oh.
Digital cassette.
Yeah, the DCS or something like that. Digital cassette system that Sony can't.
I never had any of that. Wow.
No, I owned a DAT player and I loved my DAT. DAT was awesome.
DAT was the best.
Yeah. I had a portable Tascam that was beer proof. And so when I played live shows, I'd stick it on the mixer and it was great. Nice. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. No, I feel like I've had just about every other format of everything ever, right? Like I've had, I guess I never had an HD DVD player, but I had an 8-track player when I was a kid, and I had numerous cassette players and boom boxes. Of course, turntables. My first music listening device was a turntable, a red and white plastic suitcase turntable. Of course, a CD player and mini disc player, and then of course, you know, all the digital stuff that I've got. But never got into digital cassettes or DAT.
Well, DAT was very much a recording format for like music professionals, kind of.
Yeah, like you'd use it for a recording studio. Or, yeah. I mean, even when I was doing wedding DJing, because you'd think that would be a pretty good one, right? Mm-hmm. Like the being able to call up a song back then, being able to call up a song as quickly as you could with DAT compared to regular cassette, you'd think you would have gone with something like that. But mini disc came along so quickly that
for wedding DJ, that would have been awesome.
What's that?
Well, a mini disc for wedding DJ
it was
awesome.
Yeah, it totally was. I did a few weddings. I did a considerable number of weddings, first with cassette for the first company I worked for, and that was horrendous because you knew which song you wanted on the cassette from the list.
And then you had to find the timer marker for it.
No, well, you could do it that way, but better was you rewound to the beginning, or you always kept the cassettes rewound to the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then you hit play, and then you hit fast forward the number of songs you needed to skip over. Mm-hmm. they had the cassette players that could like sense the amount of space between the songs. And there were a couple songs that really screwed things up.
There are a couple artists that would screw things up. They had like filler noise in between or something in the track.
Well, no, because they were you wouldn't use pre-recorded cassettes. Oh, it would all be. But there were songs. I'm trying to remember a good example of this where there'd be a drop, like basically where they'd go, bam, and then they come back in. For some reason, Hip to Be Square is coming to mind.
Yeah, like they do that. Those, yeah, they do that.
They drop in the middle of the song. Anyways, you always had to watch out for that. Good times. Good times with all those.
Yep.
Let's see. Where did I leave off this one right here? Yes. So Four Chords and Several Years Ago was the last album to have Mario Cipollina on that. He left the band after the tour ended. The album did chart on the top 200, got all the way up to number 55, and did two minor hits on adult contemporary radio, Some Kind of Wonderful, which got up to number 7, and But It's All Right, which got up to number 5. In 1996, they released their first greatest hits album. Kind of surprising, right? Because you'd think that, I mean, I guess Sports and Four are greatest hits.
Yeah, really. It's
The album was called, the greatest hits album was called Time Flies. And of course it did focus on Picture This, Sports, and Four.
So this to me really felt like it could have been the end for me. And
they could have walked away and said, hey, all right, this is it, everybody. Thank you. You've been a great audience.
Yeah. In fact, this was the last one that I bought day and date on release.
Uh-huh.
And I felt like, okay, my Huey Lewis experience has lasted, you know, 16 years or so. I'm good. And I can move on. And I kind of did. And it wasn't until recently that I realized that they went on a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they really did. Let's see here. The lineup of the band changed over time. Mario left, as we mentioned, was replaced by John Pierce. The Tower of Power, which toured with them in the 80s, stopped doing that in 1994. The horn players Marvin McFadden, Ron Stallings, and Rob Suddeth are now the sports section. So you get the news and now you have the sports section. I love that. In 2000, Huey starred with Gwyneth Paltrow in duets, and the band performed the hit cover of Cruisin', Smokey Robinson classic.
Okay, so when are you guys going to film sack that business?
We really need to, because not only do you have Gwyneth Paltrow and Huey Lewis, you've got Maria Bello, you've got... I can never remember this guy's name when I need to pull it out. But he's the guy who he was Rhino in the Spider-Man movie. He was
Paul
in Sideways.
Paul Giamatti?
Paul Giamatti. Yes, Paul Giamatti. I won't say it's a great cover. He does a cover of Todd Rundgren's Hello, It's Me for that movie. And I only have the soundtrack. I've actually never seen the movie. But it's about karaoke people.
Yeah.
It's funny. We definitely need to sack that one. In 2001, Chris Hayes decided to retire to spend more time with his family. Steph Burns stepped in and took his place. 7 years later, from their last album, Four Chords, they released the album Plan B, released it on Jive Records. It made only a brief appearance on the charts. Songs like Let Her Go and Start Over made a short blip on the adult contemporary charts, but really not much of a ripple anywhere else. They continued to tour, though, playing about 70 dates a year. In 2004, they recorded and released Live at 25, which celebrated the band's 25th anniversary. And in 2008, they recorded the soundtrack to the movie Pineapple Express. It was Seth Rogen and...
like James Bond for pot smokers, right?
Yeah, yeah. In 2009, touring saxophonist Ron Stallings passed away due to multiple myeloma. And in 2010, they released their first album of material in almost a decade, another cover album called Soulsville. It was released on Stax Records, peaked at number 121 on the top 200 and number 18 on the R&B chart. This is another, you know, I mentioned this earlier, but another great example of how they pick their covers. A couple hits on there, but for the most part, these are songs that you may be familiar with, but are probably not going to be familiar with, and really, really good, solid covers. The 30th anniversary edition of Sports was released with newly mastered tracks and live versions of songs. That was released in 2013. By the way, did you listen to some of those? There was a couple session takes in there. The best one of which and we've got to maybe play a clip from that on here, is Heart of Rock and Roll. So you get an early version of Heart of Rock and Roll, I think when Huey is kind of demoing it for the band. But it's got, for the most part, a lot of the other instrumentation, right? It's mm-hmm. got the guitars and drums and everything that you're familiar with the single release. But there's no brass in there at all, no horns. But you've got Huey Lewis making the horn sounds to kind of indicate where they're going to go. So he's like going, hard rock and roll.
That's great.
So good. It's really, really good. A new song, While We're Young, started getting played while they were out on tour in 2013. And in a 2015 interview, Huey said, the band is ready to record new music and they just love the new songs they've written and they're hard at work at getting a full album put together. By the end of 2015, they had 4 songs recorded and mixed, 2 songs written and ready to be recorded, and 1 more in the works. And that, my friends, was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So, what's going on, Huey? What's where is this thing? Where are we at?
Fake news.
Fake news. Well, you know, they don't want to do an EP, I guess, right?
Yeah. But with this new age of digital singles, they could embrace that and just churn out 99-cent hits.
They totally could. Yeah.
Call it
for sure. And I'd be curious to see actually, what current generation Huey Lewis songs would sound like, not covers, but like their, you know, originals. What direction do they go? Do they just try and stick with what they're excellent at, which is the doo-wop rock and roll, kind of thing, or do they try and modernize their stuff a little bit? And I would hope they'd do the former and kind of,
I think they would stay with themselves. I don't think they would hire, what's his nuts from, who's the big producer that produces everybody that has the beard. Rick Rubin.
Oh, Rick Rubin. Yeah, okay.
They're not going to hire Rick Rubin and change everything up.
No, but you know who'd be great and who's been doing a lot of really great production stuff lately is it Dan Auerbach?
Yes.
From Black Keys. Mm-hmm. He would be great. Like have him produce the next Huey Lewis album. I think it'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Hammond, tell me some stats about the band.
We've got more than stats. I've got some, you know, other things too. So they had 19 top singles across the Billboard Hot 100 adult contemporary and mainstream charts. Power of Love was nominated for an Oscar.
Oh, wow.
And like we mentioned, sat at number one.
But do you know what it lost to, by the way?
I don't, but I also know that Blame Canada was nominated for an Oscar. So,
well, I'm curious. I'm looking it
up. Okay. Well, you do that and I'll go keep going. Their second album, Certified Gold, Sports sold 10 million copies in the U.S. alone. 4 was certified platinum. Hard at Play was certified gold. So the other thing I wanted to bring up is we didn't mention, but this Ghostbusters lawsuit.
Yes, that happened. Right.
There were similarities to I Want a New Drug. It was settled out of court. Huey reported that his interactions with the studio producers during the lawsuit are kind of indirectly responsible for his work on Back to the Future. In a later issue of Premiere Magazine, producers admitted using I Want a New Drug as temp background music in some of the scenes of Ghostbusters. And they said they'd actually approached Huey Lewis to do the theme, but he turned him down because of other obligations, like touring and sports and, you know, videos and all that kind of stuff. But I guess what they did was they handed the temp tracks over to Ray Parker Jr. and said, we want it to sound like this. And I guess he took it a little more seriously or a little more literally than he should have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding.
The other thing I wanted to bring up was the 30th anniversary. Go ahead.
Before you get to that, it lost. The Academy Award went to Say You, Say Me by Lionel Richie for the film White Nights. So another really good one.
Yeah. It's good. It doesn't have mm-hmm. the heart and soul that...
It doesn't, but nicely done, sir. All right, I'll let you get back to your stats.
So the other thing I wanted to bring up is that Huey Lewis obviously has a really good sense of humor. It's done in his, it's shown in the videos. It's kind of shown in the way he's kind of done his stuff. And it's no more evident than in the 30th anniversary ad that Be Funny or Die did with Weird Al Yankovic and Huey Lewis recreating the scene from American Psycho. And he's talking about American Psycho with Weird Al Yankovic playing the drug person on the sofa. And he does that. A shot for shot recreation and talking about American Psycho the way that Patrick Bateman talked about Huey Lewis.
Yes.
And then he axes him and says, we parody one of my songs now, and whacks him again.
Right. Oh, that was so good. I love that.
So, yeah. For someone who's kind of, it's interesting. They've really kind of stayed untainted by media, untainted by scandal, untainted by stuff. Mm-hmm. And they've been around forever. Mm-hmm. He started 1972. I was one.
Wow.
So when you start thinking about the impact he's had on pop music, pop culture, not just pop music, it's kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, totally. It totally is. Totally true. All right. Well, let's get to our Stairway to Heaven songs. You see Huey Lewis in the News in concert, and basically you got a few songs you're expecting them to play. But what's the one song that you don't walk out of that theater? You don't walk out of that arena until the band cranks up and does.
There's a half a dozen songs that I could list.
Easily.
I don't even know where to start, but my heart goes with, like, Do You Believe in Love? Because it's old.
Because it's early. Yeah. It's like second album early. Yeah.
And then, of course, Heart of Rock and Roll and I Want a New Drug. But then you throw in things like Power of Love. I don't know if they play Back in Time a lot because it's kind of, it's kind of period specific.
I would say, I'd throw Working for a Living in there too because it's, number one, it's early. And it's got to be a crowd favorite, a live favorite, right? Like, it's got to be one that they enjoy playing live.
Well, like A Couple Days Off has that moment where they're like, all I want is a couple days off. So I'm sure that's a crowd singer too.
Yeah, probably. All right. I'm pulling up setlist.fm. And number one is a three-way tie with 400 performances of each. The Power of Love, The Heart of Rock and Roll, and Working for a Living.
Really?
Yes.
Damn if you don't. I'm supposed to get a raise next week. You know damn well I won't. Working for a living. Work. Working for a living. Working for a living. Never had a working. I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for a living.
Next up is Heart and Soul, which they claim is an Exile cover. Oh, it is, isn't it? I did know this because I think I've got the original version. But I didn't think it was Exile. I thought it was the Busboys. Sorry.
No, it's fine. I'm working with an expert and an authority figure.
Yeah. Busboys. It was Busboys, not Exile. Heart and Soul, a cover of a song by the Busboys, is their fourth most play after that three-way tie-in first, followed by I Want a New Drug, If This Is It. We're not here for a long time. We're here for a good time. That's surprising because that seems like a weird one to play constantly in concert. Not a hit for them.
Yeah.
Maybe but they it's
do
all right.
It, maybe they do it because they like it. I mean, sometimes bands put maybe. In songs that they enjoy to play.
Yeah, maybe. But It's All Right, which is a cover of the J.J. Jackson song from Four Chords. Do You Believe in Love, which is a Supercharged cover. I didn't know that one. And Back in Time actually did make the top 10 list, surprisingly, that they'd wow. cover that more than they'd cover stuff like Hip to Be Square and Stuck With You.
Well, here's the thing. Hip to Be Square is a very up-tempo song, and they're not young boys anymore.
No, that's true. And what's funny is, that was a song that was back in the Jocks versus the Nerds days. And it was like, all right, you know, the nerds are slowly, you know, making a comeuppance and whatever. It wasn't like it is now, where it is cool to be square.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say hip, but it wasn't like it is now. And they're doing the song back then.
It's okay to be white and nerdy, which is kind of what that first.
Right. There you go. All right. Well, let's get to our playlist. This is where Hammond and I both pick a set of songs, 5, 6 songs that we really like that maybe aren't necessarily greatest hits, but sometimes we break that rule and create lists that you'll be able to hear on Spotify. For the most part, there are going to be some of these songs that aren't on Spotify. So look for them on YouTube and stuff like that. But I'll go first, as I always do. First up for me is Tell Me a Little Lie. This is from that second album, Picture This. Just a little lie to remember you by. Please don't tell me that you're sorry. Tell me I was the one and only. It doesn't matter if you mean it. This one kind of gives you a good glimpse of where the band was going to be heading. And it's a really good tune. It does kind of stand out for me on Picture This, along with like Do You Believe in Love and Working for a Living, but it's a good tune on its own. You Crack Me Up on Sports is my, well, You Crack Me Up from the album Sports. my second song. This is one that even when I had the album back in 1982, this was a song that I always gravitated towards and kind of felt like, oh, this should have been a single. This is such a great song.
Yeah.
I Know What I Like from the album 4. But I couldn't tell you what's good or bad. My third choice, and not just because of the lyric. I like the sound of breaking glass, and if you don't believe me, why do you ask? It's like I didn't ask you. You did this song, and I didn't ask you how you feel about the sound of breaking glass, but I believe you. I believe you. Number 4 comes from Plan B. It's a cover of a Rock Pile song called When I Write the Book.
Yeah, the boy I used to be.
It's a great song. It's a favorite of mine from that whole pub rock era with Dave Edmunds and Nick Lowe and Rock Pile and Elvis Costello. But they do a great version of it, and it's a good example of a non Motown oldie R&B tune that they still managed to nail really well.
You keep saying this, and it brings me back to the fact that this shows me that they really do love this musical style, and
yes,
they're steeped in the history of it, because they're not just pulling from the K-Tel greatest hits of Motown.
Exactly.
They're going for the cuts that they love, and they want more people to know about.
Right. The stuff that inspired them, which is great. I mean, that is the epitome to me of why you do covers. 100%. And then my last one is another cover, just because. This one comes from 4 Chords. It is Some Kind of Wonderful. I got more than I could ask for. See. Both, you know, that 4 Chords album and Soulsville are both great cover albums. Really, really good. True to the originals, but still very much slathered in that Huey Lewis in the News sound. So it's
they're wrapped up in the newspaper.
Like an old fish. I mean, basically that's it. It's like they nail their sound down and don't let it get obscured by the fact that they want to be true to these originals. So both albums, really good cover albums to pick up. And that's it. That's my list of five, Hammond.
Well, I threw in one and I'll explain.
I love it. No, go ahead. All right, so here's your list.
My first one is a hit, and I don't care. It is Bad is Bad from Sports. I see cool is a rumor. Sometimes bad is bad. And the only thing I put in the notes is that cool is a rule, but sometimes bad is bad. And I freaking love this song. And I remember I worked for days nailing the harmonica parts when I was in college. And
so, all right. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Well, I don't want to talk about the lyrics of this song because the way I gather it from the descriptions in each of the verses, right? Like he goes to this restaurant with all you can eat chili and it's $1.99, but really about a dollar's worth is all that he could stand. So when he's saying sometimes bad is bad, obviously he's saying, sometimes bad means, oh dude, that's bad.
Yeah.
Other times like, oh dude, that's bad. And I get that. I get that from the lyrics. So basically he's saying that,
he's
describing the things that are really bad, but it bums me out that he's talking about this friend of his who plays guitar, sounds like a chainsaw buzzing and he's telling his parents that, man, your son is bad. Like, all right, that's kind of mean. Kind of mean, Huey. He's being mean. He's letting on to the parents that, oh, dude, your son is bad. Probably making them think, all right, Huey Lewis likes the way our kid plays guitar.
My chainsaw buzzing kid.
Right, exactly. And then finding the, shoes underneath the bed of...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, geez, that's bad.
Yeah. Cool as a rule, but sometimes bad is bad.
Sometimes bad is bad. But that would never be, oh, dude, you found shoes under your wife's bed? That's bad. Badass. No one's ever going to get that confused. Like the chili.
Well, unless they fit, and then you can just wear them.
Right. Oh, geez. Okay, yeah, that's true. All right. Look at these bad shoes I got. Found them underneath my bed.
They're not mine.
All right, let's get to your next song.
The next one I picked is Good Morning Little Schoolgirl from Four Chords. This is a good old-fashioned blues tune. It's a cover of a Sonny Boy Williams song.
Good morning, little schoolgirl. Can I come home with you? Tell your mom and your papa.
And Huey has a great harmonica sound for it, and it really kind of showcases his skill as a player.
Yeah.
Then I actually picked the aforementioned Once Upon a Time in New York City from Oliver & Company. It's a great song about the magic that New York can have for people who either go there or live there, and how they're kind of wrapped up in the spell of the city.
Now it's always once upon a time in New York City. It's a big old battle. Tough old town, it's true. But beginnings are contagious there. They're always set in stages there. They're always...
I think I need to see that movie. I've never seen it. It's a Ralph Bakshi, right?
Yeah, I think. It's not perfect as far as a Disney animated film goes, mm-hmm. but it is fun.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And it's got, like I said, it's got the two songs right off the top are Huey Lewis and Billy Joel.
Yeah. Huh. All right.
And I think Billy Joel is actually a voice throughout the film is the dog.
Oh, really? Yeah. Like he does one of the dog's voices?
Mm-hmm. I think he's the main dog.
You're the main dog now, dog.
Yeah. And then the song that Brian was poking at.
That I ripped apart earlier.
Walking with a Kid. And the reason I picked it. It's from Small World, and the reason I picked it is really because the San Francisco 49ers sing back up. This is Joe Montana, Ronnie Lott, Dwight Clark, and Alex, and like I said.
What they did, walking with a kid.
And this kind of goes to Huey's undying love of his city of San Francisco. He's sung the national anthem a bunch of times for different sporting events. He's done lots of things for the city, and he's kind of a prominent member of that community. And I like it because of the kind of the sentiment of the song, which mm-hmm. is one thing. And then I also like it because it just kind of ties in that relationship you have with where you live.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
And you don't have to like the song. I get it. We can have differing tastes. I'm okay with that.
It's cheeseball. But I love the fact that it is the involvement that he has with the other.
Yes, this is an extremely cheeseball song. And you have no idea if he's talking about getting in a bar fight or teaching his kid how to not pee outside the toilet.
Right, exactly.
I mean, really, you have no idea what he's going until the very end. We're like, okay, son.
Oh, son. Okay. Yeah. It's the real kid. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
But I get it. And it's not for everybody, but for me, it hits those chords, not just because of what the song is saying, but how it came about and what it means on a larger picture.
Totally get that. And you know what? I think I like it more now than I did before. I'll be honest. I think I do.
And then I've picked Finally Found a Home from Sports. This is a great story about kind of feeling lost until you find out where you belong. And with him, it's on a stage, of course, playing music. But if you kind of translate that to anything on a personal level, you can kind of start kind of relating to it because it's telling the story of going, you know what, I spent some time in school, had some fun, kind of played a fool, I didn't really fit in, and now I finally found a home right here where I belong. And it's just kind of a cool tune.
That's cool. Kind of carries, you know, forward with the thing before, like the the feeling of his community and stuff mm-hmm. like that with walking with a kid carries over into this one as well.
And then I threw in a bonus, which is a harmonica solo from a live performance. It's Tokyo 1992, so I think it's the year after that I saw him. Mm-hmm. But he does similar solos. If you click through YouTube, it's all kind of a similar structure to his solos. I'm going to put a sample of him just kind of blowing away on a solo in there too.
As soon as I saw that link in there, I checked it out and I'm like, oh, dude is, you know,
he's proficient.
Crazy talented.
Yeah. He's proficient on that thing.
He really is. And back then I had no idea that he was actually the one playing harmonica and I didn't know if it was him or another member of the News that was the harmonica player. It's not like Jay Giles where he got Magic Dick and his licking stick playing harmonica separate from Peter Wolf. But
yeah.
It's just fun saying that guy's name, by the way.
Yeah.
We'll have to do a Jay Giles band
sure.
at some point.
I would love that.
Yeah. Because everybody knows Centerfold. And that's it, right?
Yep.
Freeze Frame, pretty much all the stuff from Freeze Frame.
You know, it dawned on me. I had someone approach me the other day and tell me that we need to do The Clash.
I don't think the people – well, maybe. You know I mean, what? Maybe.
People know Rock the Casbah.
Right. They know Rock the Casbah. They know London Calling.
Yeah.
Train in Vain. And, you know, they might not know the whole story between Mick Jones and Joe Strummer and the animosity and stuff. And
There's something
that actually would be a good
one. There's something there that we could probably work with. Maybe we do something a little more overarching about punk. I don't know. But
I don't know. Or maybe I do. You got to listen to this. And I do Sandinista, which is such a great album.
Yeah, maybe that's what we do. We kind of bribe one of our podcaster buddies to do that one.
Hey, or Tom, I just do it.
Hey, Tom, say, we're doing, you got to listen to this. And this is what you have to listen to.
Here's the album you're going to choose. Perfect. Let's do that. Excellent. All right. Well, that is going to do it for this episode of Huey Lewis and the News on Soundography. Coming up next week, we're going to be looking at the band King's X, a metal group. I almost did the whole thing. I don't know King's X. I've never even heard of these guys.
Okay,
but
I've done that
so many times.
Can I give the backstory on this?
Yes, please.
Okay, the first season that you and I were talking about music, I said, hey, have you heard of King's X? And you're like, no. And we pulled it up. I gave you one of their big hits. and you're like, oh, I think I know this song a little bit, but I don't know anything else about him. Fast forward to us talking about season two.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, how about King's X? And you're like, who's that?
I've never heard of him.
I've never heard of him. So I pull up the song and you're like, oh, I've watched this one. And all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, I remember this now. And then this season, I'm like, hey, how about King's X? And you're like, I've never heard of him. And we pull it back up. So this will be an interesting conversation because I'm not sure if you're going to remember anything.
I know. Here's what's going to be great is we'll, you know, it's season four or something. We'll be talking about a heavy metal band. You'll go, oh, yeah, kind of like King's X. And I'll go, who's that? It'll be after we've done this episode, and I'll still have no idea who you're talking about. Cool. King's X. Looking forward to that. If you want to get in touch with us, please, I urge you, I beg you to do so. Email us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Soundography over there. Soundography.com is where you're going to find everything else. You're going to find every episode we've ever recorded, all three seasons of this show. You can go there, listen to any episode you want. Talk about us in the show notes, even click the links, which all do magical individual things. Like one of them will go to Amazon where you can buy some of the songs that you hear us talk about. Usually a greatest hits album is what we point to. You never know with us. Another link will take you to Spotify where you can listen to streaming versions of all the songs in our playlists. And yet another button will actually help you donate and be a supporter of the show on Patreon. We like that button a lot because you become our boss. You basically become our program director if you contribute enough, and you can tell us what you want us to listen to. Hell, maybe one of you wants us to listen to Sandinista by The Clash. I'd love that. check that out. You can also find that patreon.com/soundography. And I think that's it. That's it.
Yeah, I think we've this. What's it? What did Walter Cronkite say when the news was over?
I said, good night and good now. And that's the news. I'm Walter Cronkite. Where's my scotch? That's it. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibbett saying, we'll see you next time right here on Soundography and Where's My Scotch?
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.